Thanks, Shane. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Thanks very much, Dermot. Good afternoon on this Thursday afternoon. 51551 for your texts. You can send us emails to ray@rte.ie. We say happy birthday to Paul Mescal. Paul Mescal celebrates his birthday today. He's 27. And he's having a bit of a run of it, isn't he? Nominated for an Oscar. And I see that A Streetcar Named Desire moved from its original venue to the West End for a 6-week run. The tickets went on sale yesterday and, yeah, you guessed it, sold out. So if you're hoping to pop over to London to see Paul Mescal before he goes into the stratosphere in A Streetcar Named Desire, you're out of luck. They sold out in just 2 hours. That's apparently, it becomes the fastest selling production to date in any Ambassador Theatre Group venue. So well done to Paul. That's good news on his birthday. He plays the part of Stanley. And his mum, Dervla, who we spoke to last week, lovely woman. She has reached another level of infamy. Well, not infamy, really. I love these stories. And it's a real credit to the postal service in this country. You've heard these before, but they always bring a smile to my face. Today, Dervla Mescal, Paul's mum, put a photo up on Instagram of a letter that she got to her without an actual address. And she took a picture and she said, "This made me laugh," beside an envelope that reads, "Dervla Mescal, mother of Paul Mescal, Maynooth, County Kildare." Hey! They're the ones, aren't we? And we wish her well, because she didn't say it on the day, but you would have heard that story about. So we wish Dervla well. A virtual hug on its way out to Maynooth. It'll find its way there because, you know, she's Paul Mescal's mum. 51551 ray@rte.ie. We were telling you a couple of weeks ago that the Leap Card people are given something back, which is lovely, something for free this bank holiday weekend. That if you have a Leap Card, you can bring a companion free. And we were saying that if you're on your own and you're in a queue, that maybe you could pay for the person behind you and say, "That's my plus one," and bring them on the bus or the train or whatever. And now they've announced, Air Coach have announced, that you can use your Leap Card on Air Coach over the weekend. So that's more good news for people who have Leap Cards. Yesterday was the 1st of February, the beginning of the Celtic Spring and St. Bridget's Day. Today is Groundhog Day. Hey! Is it a year since we spoke about Groundhog Day? Oh, my word. You know the story. Yeah, yeah. It's based in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania. And there's a legend, a German legend, about a furry rodent. Officials in the community, which is about 65 miles northeast of Pittsburgh in Pennsylvania, welcome a crowd of thousands every year. So they gather at Gobbler's Knob. Gobbler's Knob. As members of Punxsutawney Phil's inner circle summoned him from his tree stump. This is the little rodent, Punxsutawney Phil, at dawn to learn if he has seen his shadow. And they say he did. So according to folklore, if he sees a shadow, there will be 6 more weeks of winter. If he doesn't, spring comes early. And here was the announcement from earlier today.
"But above all else, I see a shadow my stage."
Oh, no.
"And so, no matter how you measure, it's 6 more weeks of winter weather."
Where are they cheering? Where are they booing and hissing? Anyway, there's the news from Punxsutawney and Punxsutawney Phil, and the very happy man announcing that he could see the shadow. Remember Tiger King at the beginning of the lockdown? We all sort of dived in, deep diving, and we were fascinated by it. I wonder if it would have been as big if the lockdown didn't happen. Anyway, they're saying, Netflix are saying, that the new Tiger King is this Gunther's Millions. Now, who's Gunther? Gunther is a dog. And he inherited 328 million from somebody who left him, you know, a woman left them millions and millions and millions. And now they're doing a sort of fly on the wall reality TV docuseries, and it's on Netflix. It's a 4-parter. The tale of a pampered pooch worth 322 million, or even 322 million, and living the high life. But it's everything really quite as it seems. So seemingly it's not what it seems. It's fantastically off the wall. I don't know if I'm interested enough in Gunther, but I'm sort of Gunther curious. I might just, you know, when nobody's watching, I might have a look at it. But anyway, they're saying it's the new Tiger King, Gunther's Millions. So while we're on animals, Ben Lamb is the man who's behind the de-extinction of the dodo. We spoke about it yesterday, and he has made time to talk to us today. He's a technologist and a venture capitalist, and his new project is this, where he's going to de-extinct the dodo and maybe the mammoth and other things, and he's going to talk to us about that from the United States of America later today. We're also talking to Karen and Damien, who won awards at the Outsider Awards last night. Karen rode across the Atlantic Ocean, as did Damien. So they're pairing up to come in and tell us about their experiences. We're looking forward to that. And Tom King. Tom King is a larger-than-life blacksmith who, because of COVID, returned to something he sort of probably always wanted to do. And now he's making jewellery and sculptures up in County Meath, I think. And he's coming in to talk to us about that. That's Tom King after 4 o'clock. And lots more besides. And of course, we have the quiz. But before all that, on this Thursday afternoon, something to shake the cobwebs off you if you have them. Bit of AC/DC. Yes. Good afternoon. Brian Johnson. Yeah. He took over from Bon Scott. Actually, that was released in July of 1980. And Bon had died. Bon Scott had died in February of that year. Now, got my tickets for the final night, Ray. I first saw Paul Mescal in Asking For It. That was the Louise O'Neill play in The Everyman in Cork, where I'd like to say I spotted his potential, says Jean. 51551RayRT.ie. We're looking for two of you to come on after 4 o'clock and take part in our whodunit quiz. And when you come on, you will answer three whodunit questions each on music, sport, books, politics, comedy, TV shows, anything that involves human endeavour. And like all whodunits, there will be clues. If you answer without a clue, you get two. That's 2 points if you opt for the more difficult option and don't take a clue. However, if you opt for a clue, it's easier and you get 1 point. And there is a prize this week. As always, it's a two-night stay for two people in the four-star Royal Marine Hotel in Dunleary. Includes B&B and dinner in Dune Restaurant on one of the nights. The Royal Marine is a luxury four-star hotel located in the heart of Dunleary, overlooking the charming views of Dublin Bay. Offers a modern twist with a historic feel, featuring Victorian staircases and large sash windows, which welcome in the natural light from Dublin Bay each morning. And they have the Sansana Spa, award-winning spa. Lots to do around the area. RoyalMarine.ie. RoyalMarine.ie. Okay. This is your qualifying question on this Thursday. It's the 2nd of February. Is it known in the States as Groundhog Day or Warthog Day? Is it Groundhog Day or Warthog Day? 0818 715 925. That's 0818 715 925.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray at rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Or you can send text into 51551. Now, we mentioned this yesterday. The phrase dead as a dodo might soon become extinct because a gene editing company wants to bring back the dodo. They want to de-extinct the dodo, which was a flightless bird found in Mauritius. It might sound like the plot of a science fiction movie, but it's true. And on the line is Ben Lamb, co-founder and CEO of Colossal Biosciences. Hello, Ben.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to our chat. So is this headline grabbing or is this real?
I mean, it's real. I mean, we have a company called Colossal Biosciences based here in the United States. We previously announced the de-extinction project around the woolly mammoth and the thylacine or Tasmanian tiger. Given the iconicness of the dodo, we thought that it was only, you know, fitting for us to start working on the dodo as well. And I'm partnered with George Church, who's arguably the father of modern day genetics and synthetic biology, to do this.
So he was one of the pioneers of the human genome. So he is the man, really, isn't he, George Church?
Yeah, he's a man. I mean, he invented a lot of the next-gen read-write technologies. He was one of the first to publish with CRISPR. You know, actually was the first to use CRISPR in mammalian cells. And he actually, his lab at Harvard holds the record for number of edits. And so they've actually done this in pigs and many other animals. And so interestingly enough, he's actually been working on the mammoth project with a kind of a shoestring budget for about 6 years. And then we started the company, and now fast forward, we've got 85 people. We raised $225 million in 5 labs around the world, fully dedicated to the cause.
Will you explain to people as best you can in the vernacular how CRISPR gene editing works?
Yeah, so we talk about CRISPR, but and I think CRISPR's done a really good job of getting people excited because people have all, you know, people saw what Jennifer Doudna got with the Nobel Prize. But essentially, we as humanity now have a suite of tools and technologies, including CRISPR, that allows us to edit the genome. So this is things like we can actually synthesize big pieces of DNA and create DNA and swap it out with existing DNA. We can even go change the individual letters on those little rungs in kind of that twisted ladder that when you think of what DNA looks like. And so from a tool set perspective, we can knock out pieces of the DNA, we can replace parts of the DNA, and we can even change those letters. So humanity and you know, obviously biotech companies like us now have tools and technologies that we can start to manipulate genomes in a myriad of different ways.
So for our listeners, it's like if I had in front of me two A4 pages with instructions as to what something should be. And then I came to paragraph two and I decided that the second sentence wasn't what I wanted to be. And I can take that out and put in a new sentence. That's what you can do with genes.
Yeah, you
can
take it out and it would repair itself. Yes. Or and we just have that sentence. Or you can swap out the words, swap out the letters, or add a whole new paragraph.
Oh, yeah, very exciting. Very exciting indeed. Now,
so it's really exciting, and we've been really grateful. We're super happy to talk to you, and we've just gotten this worldwide feedback that people are really excited about the work. And what's interesting is a lot of the technologies that we're developing also have applications to both conservation and to human healthcare. Mm. And so while we're focused on de-extinction, we have kind of this halo effect of giving conservationists new tools to combat species loss, as well as developing technologies which also can help human healthcare.
We'll come to that. Just back to George for a moment, because George, there is a connection between George Church and Michael Crichton and Jurassic Park. Because everybody yesterday when they read this immediately said Jurassic Park. So what's the connection there?
I actually can't get – well, I mean, I think that Jurassic Park gave everyone the, kind of the viewpoint of how we could de-extinct species, right? I think Michael Crichton in the movies, the books in the movies, got people, you know, thinking about what is possible and actually did a lot of great education on getting people excited about gene editing, even in the 90s and early 2000s. And what's interesting, though, about George is Michael Crichton, in his original book, Jurassic Park, there's actually a DNA sequence. That sequence is actually pulled from some of George's earlier work, which is amazing. So there is this connection, ironically, between George and Michael Crichton.
Okay.
Even though the two never met.
Okay, just the basics then. Where do you get the DNA of a dodo?
So the way that Colossal works is we're a very collaborative group of people, and we have scientists that we collaborate worldwide. So Beth Shapiro, who's one of the leading ancient DNA experts in the world, she's on our scientific advisory board and our lead paleogeneticist. She actually worked with a series of different museums to actually get the dodo to get different samples from museums. They take individual pieces of bone, some actual soft tissue that's still in the skull and other places, and then they go through a process of actually sequencing in that. And that's when computers read that DNA and tell you what those individual letters are to your paragraph example that we can then go manipulate.
Okay. So let's stick with the paragraphs then, the two A4 pages. So you have that, and you have the instructions that the dodo would have got, the dodo cells would have got way back then. They're extinct since 1662 or thereabouts. They don't know exactly when. So you have those list of instructions in a computer. Where do you put those instructions then?
Yeah. So once you have those instructions, right, and you understand what the book is, we don't have a living dodo, right?
No.
So you can't just like clone it. So what we have to do is we have to do what's called comparative analysis, where you actually compare the genome to the closest living relative. And that's in the case of the dodo, ironically, it's the Nicobar pigeon. So most people don't know this, but the dodo was actually a form of a pigeon. And if you look at a picture, if people have a picture of the Nicobar pigeon, it's beautiful. And then you look at a picture of what we think the dodo looked like, not so beautiful.
Quite ugly,
right?
Yes.
So it's really interesting. I mean, I think it's cute.
Unsightly. Well, not traditionally beautiful then. Okay.
I mean, when you look at the Nicobar pigeon, it's absolutely beautiful. It's like rainbow. It's like right out of, you know, like a fashion show, right? It's unbelievable. And so you then do the comparative analysis. And then what we want to do is we don't need to copy and synthesize the whole genome, because we can get the physical attributes or phenotypes just by doing that study of the two genomes. And then we just start editing the Nicobar pigeons genes, genomes with dodo genes so that we're creating this proxy species using the Nicobar as our host.
Right. Okay. So will it be a hybrid then of the Nicobar and the dodo, or will it... It'll look like a dodo. The phenotype is the what we can see.
Physical attributes.
It's what we can see. Yeah.
So in all of our in both the mammoth, the thylacine, and then also the dodo, we're not looking to create exact clones, because if they serve the ecological reason why we're bringing them back, as well as they have all of those core physical attributes. Like if you look at our dodo and say, oh my gosh, that's a dodo, even if it's 99.8% a dodo, for us, it doesn't really matter. It kind of hits those goals. So think of it as like a proxy for the dodo. Think of it as like the dodo 2.0.
Okay. Now, I know you have bioethicists. We know from the history of mankind, unfortunately, that when technology is developed, that initially, you know, it might be for good, and it might be part of scientific research. But if it can be, inevitably it's used for wrong, for evil, for war, for, you know, whatever. And people who have the money can pay for it. So how do you protect from that happening?
Well, it's a great question. And we do have bioethicists, and we have an entire also conservation board that kind of helps govern how we think about these things. So we are only focusing on species that that bringing them back, you know, serves a purpose, right? So we're only doing that. And then all of the tools and technologies that we develop that have an application to conservation, we open source and give to the world for free. So as we make these breakthroughs, we get like, so we just last year we published the genome for the Asian elephants. And so any of that we develop that we want to give to the world for free. Now with CRISPR and any of these tools for gene editing, you know, while we aren't using them in different ways, you know, we're not the sole user of these technologies. Lots of people can use them for a myriad of different reasons. We're focusing on de-extinction and conservation. Yeah. So even when we develop tools that have an application for human healthcare, we spin those tools out. We have another team that kind of runs with those, and we stay really focused on our mission. And, you know, people are always afraid of some of these new tools and technologies, but even when the car came out, people were afraid of the car, right? And when the airplane came out. So there are all of these technologies that you know, you need to be mindful and thoughtful about how you use them. But here's a really interesting conservation example. With the tools that we've developed, plus the ones that we've exclusively licensed, and with the incredible women and men that work at Colossal, we're working to eradicate a disease called EEHV in elephants. It kills 25% of elephants worldwide every single year, way more than poaching, way more than a human-elephant conflict, and way more than anything else. And so I give you this example because, yes, some of these tools could be used in the wrong hands in the wrong way, but even with just outside the de-extinction efforts, in the next few years, Colossal, in collaboration with Pauling and some of our partners, we will eradicate EEHV. And as that gets rolled out for the elephant population, it will ultimately save more elephants than all of elephant conservation for all time.
And Ben, I know the human genome was a huge leap, but what has happened since didn't happen at the pace that people expected. Simply because we have all the detail and it's in a computer somewhere, the complexity of how genes and the information from DNA interact with each other is going to take a lot more time to understand.
Oh, yeah. And exactly. And
yes.
What's interesting is tools and technologies, even since that, in the last even like 4 or 5 years, has exponentially grown, right? You're starting to see all these different new applications of CRISPR and other kind of gene editing tools that I think people bucket just under CRISPR, even if it's not CRISPR. And so I think you're going to continue to see that exponential curve of innovation, very much like when the first computers came out and the internet came out. You saw that kind of massive acceleration curve in technology innovation. We're starting to already see that. And so there were some kind of like initial, you know, while there were initial discoveries on reading the DNA, think about just the reading part of your example. They spent billions of dollars sequencing, you know, the human genome. You can now get sequencing for $100. Nice. So look at that commoditization curve in Excel. And it took years versus 2 or 3 days now, right? Okay. And so we are constantly sequencing genomes at Colossal. And so think about that massive curve of both speed and the accuracy of the technology and the commoditization of cost, right? And so you've gone from billions of dollars of cost to hundreds of dollars of cost, you know, in less than, you know, 10, 15 years.
Yeah, you get this all the time, but I'll just give you an example of what our listeners are saying. This is the work of the devil, Ray. Where will it end? Nature selected the dodo for extinction for a reason. Let it rest in peace. Well, I suppose it was man who contributed to the extinction of the dodo. You could argue that.
It's the first time anyone's ever said this is the work of the devil. Gene editing is not witchcraft. So it's just science, right?
We're afraid of the unknown. That's the human nature, isn't it?
Yeah, but I mean, you need to, like, the point of this is you fundamentally. When you have new technologies, they're not evil. You know, there, to your point though, there is applications that could be used for evil, right? Yes. That's not us. And so I think that you need to have ethical and responsible use of these technologies, but we're only focusing on species where mankind had a role in it. So just so you know, the dodo did not go extinct, natural selection. Humanity destroyed the dodo. We killed them on Mauritius. We also introduced invasive species, which ate their eggs. So they only laid about one egg a year. So therefore, we eradicated them and forced them into extinction, right? And so we did the same thing with the Tasmanian tiger. The Australian government put a bounty on the Tasmanian tiger and literally forced them into extinction in only a few years. And so these are man-made or at least man-influenced extinction events. These are not things that, you know, they had, you know, when people have said to us, oh, well, the thylacine or the dodo had its day. Yeah, it did. And then we ruined its day.
Okay.
And so, Ben, we're trying to use technologies to kind of fix the past.
Can I ask you,
undo the sins
of the past. What's the timeline on this? When would we see a dodo?
Yeah. So there's a 30-day gestation with dodos versus with woolly mammoths and Asian elephants. There's about a 22-month. We've set a goal publicly that we want to get to our first mammoth calves by 2028. That could slip a little bit, but we're pretty confident based on where we are today. And I think given the difference in gestation, it's highly likely that we would see a dodo before we see a mammoth in 2028.
Wow. And the final word to one of our texters, our grandchildren will be cloned computer programs if this happens. It's only the start. God's beauty will change into artificial robots into the Matrix. Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, there's a lot there, right? So we're not part of the singularity. No, okay. we're not working on singularity.
Well, that's another day.
Yeah, we're not
chat with
on
you.
Computer brain interfaces.
Yeah, yeah. I'd love to chat to you about that. We've run out of time. The singularity and futurism and computers and human brain combining. I'd love to chat to you about that, Ben, because I'm sure you have great opinions on it. But we've run out of time. Ben, that was fascinating. Thanks so much for taking time to talk to us today. Ben Lam, co-founder and CEO of Colossal Biosciences, de-extincting the dodo. Thanks, Ben.
Text 51551, The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, what have you achieved today? I have two people in front of me who've rowed across the Atlantic Ocean. Hey! Damien and Karen, good afternoon. Great to talk to you. And both of you won Outsider Awards last night. Damien Brown, Man of the Year.
Big title, huh?
Big title, yeah. Karen Weeks, Woman of the Year.
Yeah, happy days, happy delighted. Days.
I'm fascinated by this solo adventure thing. I'm looking forward to this chat. How was last night? It was the Outsider Annual Awards. Good night.
Yeah, fantastic.
It was brilliant, yeah.
Incredible array of the spirit of adventure in one room, from 6-year-olds all the way up to more aged people, but everyone kind of living their kind of through their heart and things that are really important to them. And it was great to see it and be part of it.
Let's get the stats out of the way. Karen, your stats. So you went from Gran Canaria to Barbados.
I went from Gran Canaria to Barbados. It took me 80 days, just over 3,000 miles. And by doing that, I became the first Irish female to row any ocean solo and the 20th female in the world to row an ocean solo. Yay, thank you.
Damien, your stats.
New York to Galway. 3,500 miles for it's the same distance, but I went backwards a lot, so it ended up in 3,500 miles, 112 days, and the first person ever to row from New York to Galway.
Yay!
Now you started with Fosse, your friend. Which sounds like a children's animation thing.
No, Gussie.
Gussie, sorry, Gussie, not Fossey. Yeah. Gussie. And what happened to Gussie?
Unfortunately, he had to be medically evacuated on day 13. He was just suffering from extreme exhaustion. And he has his own kind of backstory around a workplace accident that left him paralysed, and an amazing story of recovery and rehabilitation, where he was only given a prognosis of 5% to ever regain any sensation below his belly button. Proved everybody wrong. Not only did he regain obviously all his sensation, but relearned to walk and totally got his life back on
track.
And
we childhood friends.
Friends right. through rugby since we were kind of 17, 18 playing representative stuff together. So that unfortunately just left some, you know, I suppose long-term kind of effects where that were exaggerated because of the extremes of trying to row an ocean. That was kind of unseen, you know, so it just ended up that he ended up having blood oxygen saturation levels of below 80, yes, below 90.
And how is he now?
He's good now, he's fine, yeah, all good,
thankfully. And he was there to welcome you back.
Yeah, thankfully he was all good.
And you were there to welcome him back.
I certainly was, yeah.
Was he there to welcome you to... No.
He didn't make it to Bridgetown.
No, Barbados would have been lovely, but...
Not that time.
Okay, well, let's start with the why then, Karen. Why does a person attempt to do something like this?
For me, I think I love pushing myself mentally and physically. And like my whole background is sports psychology. So my PhD and stuff is in how you work cognitively and how you overcome challenges and that sort of stuff. So I think I'd done a good bit of endurance stuff before. Like I'd cycled solo across Canada and the States and sailed the Atlantic a couple of times. So things like that. And I was sort of building, that was my foundation, I think, for rowing across the Atlantic. And I think it's to push myself physically and mentally, but also to be self-sufficient in that realm. So like if you're on a bike and you have your panniers, you're self-sufficient. Or even if you're with 10 people paddling around the Lofoten Islands, which we did in Norway, again, we were that unit and we were self-sufficient.
Okay.
And that self-sufficiency for me is really lovely.
Self-sufficiency.
Yeah.
I've spoken to a number of people over the years who've climbed Mount Everest.
Yeah.
And I always ask them why. And I never get a satisfactory answer. Well, the one that satisfies me. So you're the sports psychologist. You've studied this. So what? It's not self-sufficiency for them. What is the why there, do you think?
Well, I know, like, part of my study was interviewing ultra runners. So ultra distance runners, 1,000 mile plus or whatever. And a lot of those were, I looked at their motivational profiles, actually. And a lot of that would be, one, they might start at a 10K or a marathon and then they progress that to 2 marathons or the 5 marathons and then 10. And then they build it up towards an Ironman and then they build it up to, you know, the DECA Ironman or... building. So I think it's, again, it's foundational steps and stages and just pushing your barriers further and further and further. And it's just a norm then.
Is really. It? Yeah.
Yeah.
What's your why?
Big question. How long have we got, Ray? No, mine is very much, Karen said her foundational thing is, I think the foundational piece has to be for yourself internally, but there has to be more than that. So I get a lot of rewards from pushing myself physically and mentally past my perceived limits and the kind of paradigm shifts that gives me in my mind, you know, how that broadens my perspective. An outlook on not just myself and my capabilities, but also the world and its opportunities. And then on top of that, there has to be more, I think, to drive you through these really difficult things. So it has to affect people, you know, who are close to you. You know, they have to be positively affected, and it has to, as far as I'm concerned, in a kind of dutiful way, touch people who might be a bit further away in terms of connection to the project. So anybody looking on, basically, you know, they have to get something from it. And I feel if you hit those 3 boxes, you know, it's important to you, it's important to those people closest to you, they get something positive from it, and a wider group as well are touched positively, you know, if it gives them some sort of...
What, inspiration?
That's what you might get from it. I feel like if you can induce a little bit of energy in somebody to approach something that is fearful to them or something that have they have been struggling to move forward to, but they know deep down in their heart it's important to them. Well, that's a really good thing to do with your life.
Sort of, this sort of, if he can do it, if he can do that, I can do whatever.
Well, that's a belief I hold, and it's served me well, like, because we all have the same 24 hours in each day, and we all have to breathe the same oxygen. So if he can do it or she can do it, well, why can't I do it, you know? So if you show people that, I think, and I've gained something from seeing people do that, and, and why not?
Because you went through hell to get across the Atlantic.
You were saying
you did a lot more miles. And that description of rowing a couple of miles, then the wind turning, and then finding that you're gone back a half a mile, or which is an awful lot, and then having to row again. Am I bringing you back there?
One of the milestones I had was 500 nautical miles, and I got to 500 nautical miles. 500 nautical miles to Galway, big milestone, you know, a little bit of a give yourself something, a bit of celebration. And the next one then was 400, right? It was counting down in kind of 100 mile nautical mile blocks. An average day on the Atlantic, I think we'll both roughly agree, like, it's kind of 40 days with average condition, 40 miles you should make in average conditions. Not good, not bad. So that period, it, as far as I was concerned at that time, that should take me kind of 2.5, 3 days, 500 to 400. It took me 13 days.
Right.
Yeah. And that's rowing 11 hours a day. One day for 11 hours work, I made 2 miles. One day, 4 miles. One day, 7 miles. One day, 8 miles. So...
How do you not just get on the radio if you had a radio and go, listen, I'm done, hands in the air, I tried, I did my best, but bring me home, please.
Well, it's not that you don't feel like that at moments, right? And again, touching on what Karen said, it's about controlling your mind in those moments. So you have that self efficiency to deal with yourself at the worst, and you have the power to reach inside yourself and pull yourself out of that quagmire of negative emotion and despair, you know. And why? Because, you know, if you spend 3% of your life on in moments like that on expeditions, the other 97% benefits enormously. So when you get back to everyday life, no matter what comes at you, grand, I got this.
I did that, you know? So you draw on this, do you? On the bad days.
I think, you know, the times that, and there were a few times that I just thought, I remember, I suppose, really 3 times that I thought, my God, let me off this boat, please. But then, literally minutes later, I used to, a woman who ran, she holds the world record for running across America, Sylvia Andoni is her name, and she said, think about the next day, you know, so if you're picked up. So if I was picked up off the boat and they took the boat, which was called Millie and Me, and brought me to a hotel, I'd have a lovely night in a hotel, lovely meal and everything. Right. But I'd wake up the next day and I'd just be disgusted with myself, and your body'd be fine. You know, a couple of days recovery and you'd be perfect. And so I just thought of that. And even a couple of hours later, once you process it, like if I get off the boat now, yeah, it'll be grand for 24 hours. But then you'll really want to be back on the boat again to finish it.
You hallucinated.
I hallucinated a few times. I saw, and it was a norm. Like, it really was a norm. I wasn't going, oh my God, I'm hallucinating. The first one, I saw a black cat walking along the spare oars, big, long, big tail. The second one was giant cutlery along the side of the boat, giant soup spoons and knives.
Newbury silverware.
It was funny. And I was actually talking to my phone because I made a load of audio recordings, and you can hear me talking through that hallucination, which is absolutely
mad. You should have brought that in. If only we'd known.
Yeah. And then the third one, which made perfect sense, was a polar bear. So every time, he was just at the, where I pulled the oar, you know, when you finish the stroke, and he was just there and his eyes were closed and content and his four legs were splayed out. And I was thinking, why does he not flinch when I pulled the oar and, you know, it hits him. But it's interesting, and I think this is really cool. I only learned this since I came home. I was doing a talk for psychotherapists. We were chatting about it outside, actually. And they said, did you have olfactory hallucinations, smelling, you know? And I said, I didn't even know it existed. But I don't know about Damien, but there was 3 or 4 times, really genuinely, I smelt a dirty fry.
Right.
I smelled sausages and rashers and black pudding. So much so, I went down to look at the, see, was there a cruise ship coming over the horizon? Because I thought there must be.
Because we had a lady on, she's written 2 books on dementia.
Okay.
Her experience of it. And she suffers from olfactory hallucinations.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah. Like smelling, say, gas or a fire or something like that. So whatever the brain does.
Yeah.
If it, when it, it makes sense, if it can do it for one sense, why can't it do it for another sense?
Yeah, it does. I'd never heard of it before, though. Had you?
No,
did you experience
no,
that?
No, no, I didn't have any experience.
And you know, no hallucinations?
Not really. One of the strategies I had for mitigating sleep deprivation was what I call a micro nap. So I would literally, whatever I'm rowing, so how would this come about? I'd fall asleep on the oars, like while rowing, and continue to row while asleep. And then I'd kind of get knocked off the seat out because of lack of balance, you know, because my eyes are closed.
And then you'd wake with a jolt.
Yeah. So when that happened a few times, I'd crawl into the cabin, fully clothed, everything, nothing off, like no shoes off, just wet, and put 5 minutes or 6 minutes on my phone alarm and sleep for that. I mean, you'd crash the split second your head hits the pillow or whatever, and then 6 minutes later it actually, you'd wake up and it helps reboot the system.
A power nap, sort of.
Power nap,
micro
yeah.
Micro nap. Right?
Yeah, I called it a micro nap because it was just enough to get you out of that state of, you know, sleepiness.
So you didn't see anybody for how long?
98 days.
And 80 days for you were?
I saw two people on yachts. I saw two yachts on the way across.
Right.
Yeah, I know.
Just wave, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Well, they both came over. The second boat actually was a Spanish yacht and Yacht Casa. And they said, are you dismasted? Are you okay? You know, because you're so low in the water. And I said, no, I'm, you know, blah, blah, blah. And they said, how many of you? And I said, just me. You're crazy. So they came over to take photos and then sailed away.
That'd be the response of most people. You're crazy. And you said, no, I'm a sports psychologist. I know what I'm doing.
Yeah, trust me, I'm a doctor.
Yeah, trust me. The perception of time, I'm fascinated by that, you know, because we know that, say, for example, when you're waiting in a doctor's room, that time seems to go past really slowly, interminably long. And then when you're thinking back, when you remember that, it goes like that. Mm. However, when we're very busy, time goes really quickly. And then when we remember that, it goes really slowly because there's loads of bits in it. I'm intrigued to know how, firstly, you time was when you were there, and now how is it as you look back?
For me, when I was out there, the days, like, you'd wait, I was always on the oars, sometimes earlier, 3 or 4 in the morning, but I was always definitely on the oars by 4:30 because I always liked to be there for the sunrise, you know. And I'd think, oh God, another day now. And then the 24, like from sunrise to sunset, was just gone in a flash. It was just amazing.
When you were there, even when you were there?
Amazing. It was amazing. Now, in there, you're digging deep. Like,
yes.
It's just really hard.
And you've there's nothing to look at. There's no bus, though. That's the 5 o'clock bus. There's nothing like that.
Yeah.
None of the things that we have in a normal day.
I think it's actually really cool, though, because I think Damien and me did it. We obviously did similar things, but we treated it differently, which I think is great. It's healthy, because I think you were 2 hours on, 2 hours off ish. Where you are
with Gussie, when I was alone, it was a bit different. I mean, it changed with the conditions and all that sort of stuff. But generally,
but for me, like when I was rowing, I wouldn't time anything or anything, and I used to just row for hours, and it just time just whizzled away. It was incredible, actually. For me, it was incredible. Yeah, was it the same with you or?
Yeah, like you kind of measure the day. It's incredible. You became really efficient at reading where the sun is to what time it is, because that's one of your stimuli, right? And watching the waves. So, because where you place the oars in the waves is important. So you kind of end up in these really concentrated states that make time kind of, it neutralizes time, right? It has no kind
You're
of,
in the zone.
In the zone, kind of in a kind of flow, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah.
What I found really, in terms of looking back, what I found really disappointing is that the memories that stay with you are the extremes, right? The extreme highs and the extreme lows. But those memories that are equally as valuable disappear, you know, and they disappear quickly, like those moments of states that you find yourself in that are nice, right? But they're no peak experience particularly. Yeah.
So you're not capsized, or you're not seeing a shoal of fish or dolphins or whatever.
Yeah.
They're the ones that I suppose.
And they're valuable, but unfortunately, I've noticed particularly with this row that they've left me too soon, and it's really disappointing.
So what sort of, like when you're in the flow?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a generic, though. It's a generic feeling, is it? Or?
Well, it's just, I suppose, a feeling of, like, you might touch on, like, how lucky you are to be in that moment, right? Whatever it might be. It might be, like, the sunsets and the sunrises are beautiful, you know, and of course, they're different to the usual thing. But so it's not that that elicits it sometimes. It couldn't just be anything.
Did you get a sense of the curvature of the Earth? Do you know that scene in Truman Show where he gets up on the boat and he's heading off to the horizon and then he hits the end of the studio? You know, have the horizon and then the sky meets the sea. There was none. You didn't get a sense of the curvature of the earth at all. No, not for me.
I thought sometimes, though, you thought you could see land only because it was clouds, you know, way the clouds just looked distant.
Yeah.
And you think, Jesus, I'm glad it couldn't be land. You know, but I didn't see curvature really, did you?
No, I didn't see curvature such, but sometimes I felt like I was going downhill.
Yeah, right, it's bizarre, actually.
Like, you know, you have, like, you're in this funnel of downhill and that's uphill ahead of you and you're going downhill like and then I felt I was going uphill a hell of a lot as well, but that was more in my mind, I think, rather than the reality.
So you had a lot of stormy weather, 5 capsizes. So were you in the cabin for 20 hours in a row? Was that you, Karen?
Yeah,
it was you.
That was me on day 24. Right. Yeah. So I spent 175 days on an ocean rowing boat now, and that was by far the scariest day of the lot. It was harrowing, you know, because there's a couple of things that. So my belief was the cabin is always, you're safe. You can go through a hurricane and you're safe in there. And two things kind of disturbed that belief, which made those hours really long. The first thing was I capsized 3 times in the first 5 hours on a thing called power anchor, which is like an anchor that should keep you, it's a sea anchor. It works, it holds about 2 tons of water in it and it should keep you upright. So firstly, I shouldn't be capsizing and here I've capsized 3 times. And next, the other thing was I had water come into the cabin on those 3 capsizes. I couldn't figure out where it was coming from. And that's a big threat, right? It can fry your electrics and it's kind of game over. So that next 15 hours, because it was a forecast to be a 20-hour storm, was just the longest of my life, you know, speaking about time and it's our perception of it. Like a minute felt like days, like, and you're just waiting for that next capsize, listening.
Were you in the dark?
No, you had lights on. I was dawn to right, yeah, okay, it would have gone, it would have got dark later that night, but particularly that first few hours was dawn to kind of sunrise.
And you've been thrown around
when you're on power anchors. The boat is like sloshing kind of on this kind of anchor, because the anchor is meant to hold you in line with the wind and the waves, you know, and stop at least your chances of getting capsized. And it was just listening. You just, because the waves make different sounds and noises, and you know the ones that are a threat. They kind of break at a certain point and then they kind of hiss, and you're just, once you hear that hiss, you kind of put all 4 limbs onto the sides of the cabin and wait for the bang and it hits you. It never knocked me over again or never capsized me, but it didn't. That it was that anticipation that was so difficult.
So you were the first man to do this, you were the first Irish woman to do this, only the 20th woman in the world. So very small clubs. And you were talking about the foundational stuff, and you mentioned the 5K, the 10K, you know, and similar with Ian, the rowing and building and building and building, which implies that there's something else now, is there? Or do you just stop at some stage? Do you go, I got through that, I did it, I'm safe, that's it? Karen?
I'll do more.
Will you?
So I've always plans in my head, you know.
Can you share any of them with us?
I'd say the next one probably will relate to cycling, or sailing, or maybe rowing down the line, but I won't be certainly rowing in the next few years.
You're tired?
No, just something different now.
I have no plans, but there will be something, definitely, you know. But your cup is kind of empty off the back of these things, and you have to let it kind of organically refill.
I remember when, and this is like, I remember when I started running marathons, and there was a mate of mine who knows me quite well, and his thoughts was that I was running away from something. Now, like he said, if the Atlantic Ocean wasn't there, you'd end up in LA. You know, he said that was his thing, he thought, you know. And did you get that from anybody, that you're doing this to get away from something? Or
yeah, and people do say, are you running away from something? But for me, I'm embracing things.
Uh-huh.
And I think there's a really huge difference. Like I love learning. I love just learning about new things, learning about, myself as well. But I love learning just about, like, for the row, I had to learn electronics, I had to learn weather systems, I had to learn, life-saving stuff. And for me, it's just not running away from something, it's learning to something.
I get that a lot from people.
What are you running away from? Yeah.
I think it's healthy to pose these questions to yourself. Like, and I am running away from something. I'm running away from an unfulfilled life, you know. this gives me unbelievable amounts of fulfillment, you know, getting more out of myself, being the person who's demanding more of myself and pushing myself to be better every day. And it's not just as an athlete, it's a person. This has incredible effects on making, as far as I'm concerned, me more human and more in touch with my human endowments, like my consciousness and my self-awareness. Yeah. And that serves me incredibly well in my internal world, you know. So it gives me really rich rewards internally. So hence why, right, I continue to push.
Can I ask the rowers a very simple question? What happens when they meet a massive storm? Well, we've answered that already. I took part in the Clipper Round the World race in 2002. I certainly remember the moments of being scared, but also remember the wonderful joy of night sailing with beautiful phosphorescent trails behind the boat, says Brian in Dublin.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Mm. Night rowing is really special, and especially when there's a full moon, because you can see the waves,
Yes.
And like Damien was chatting about the sound of the waves, if it's dark and there's no moon, you can hear the waves and you can sort of get a judgment on them. But rowing at night with the phosphorescence is just mind-blowingly beautiful. Mind-blowing. Yeah. You'll see a dolphin going through the water, yeah, and his whole body's in phosphorescence.
I've been lucky enough to do it.
And then he comes and breaches. Yeah, it's just incredible.
Down the, what's the little pier opposite Castle Townsend? Anyway, they bring you out from there.
Yeah.
And it was just amazing night and the phosphorescence. And it's one of those things that stays with you forever, isn't it?
It's absolutely beautiful.
And the stars as well.
Listen, I still don't understand exactly why, but I'll keep asking. Congratulations again, Karen Weeks and Damien Brown, Woman and Man of the Year for the Outsider Awards that happened last night. I'm sure we'll talk again. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Ray.
Cheers. Thanks, Ray. Thank you very much. 51551 ray@rte.ie. A shout out to Donal there. He's clogging up our text line with Happy Groundhog Day, or even Groundhog Day, again and again and again and again and again. What was that? Ariston, was it? And on and on and on and on. So thanks very much for that, Donal. We get it. We get the joke. Now, we have two quizzers standing by to do our whodunit quiz. And there's a prize. Whoever gets the most points will get a two-night stay for two people in the four-star Royal Marine Hotel in Dunleary. B&B and dinner on one evening in Doon Restaurant. It's four-star luxury hotel. There's an award-winning Sansana Spa. And there's loads of things to do out there. You're out in Dunleary, or you can come into town, you can go to Airfield Estate, Dundrum Shopping Centre, whatever. RoyalMarine.ie, RoyalMarine.ie. Good afternoon, Marty.
How are things, Ray?
Marty Kelly in Dunmore in County Galway. I'm good. And you?
I'm great, Ray.
Great. You work with your hands.
I do.
What do you do with your hands?
I'm a carpenter.
Right.
So it's mainly finish work I do.
Which is
second
what?
Fix, stuff what, like that.
What's
second
that?
Second fix. It'll be kind of finishing work in houses, apartments,
right,
stuff like that.
Skirting boards?
Yeah.
No.
Skirting boards,
yes.
Doors,
yeah.
Anything like that.
That's what you do. Yeah.
That's what I do, Ray. Yeah.
It's very rewarding. It's very rewarding working with your hands.
I really look at it, can be.
Yeah.
It can be very frustrating to do sometimes.
Yeah. I think if I was coming at life again, I'd do something that would involve carpentry.
Yeah, yeah.
Just doing something with your hands that you can see something at the end of the day. Anyway, that's not gonna happen unless I get onto your man Ben Lamb. He can de-extinct me and bring me back.
It's never too late.
Never too late. Yeah, I made a couple of frames there recently, and I did. They look well, and they're steady and they're sturdy. So I did things that I'd never done before. So maybe it's the beginning of something. Now, so you're off to London for the weekend.
I am. Yeah, we're myself and my wife Myra. We're traveling tomorrow evening.
For any reason in particular?
We're actually going over to a do on Saturday night. It's the Longford Dinner Dance. It's an annual, an annual event. Neither of us have any connections with Longford, but our friends of ours do so.
Right, do you not have to prove your Longford credentials at the door? No,
no, you don't have to prove anything at the door, and you just turn up.
What's the name of the girl who took part in Love Island from Longford? What's the name of the? Go on.
The name of the girl that took part
in Love Island from Longford.
No. Oh, Maura, some Maura.
You can't get in. That's it. Sorry. Anybody from Longford would know the answer to that question. What town has the longest street in Longford? Longest and widest.
Granard, is it?
No, Ballymahan. Sorry.
Ballymahan.
I just made that up. Anyway, so that's a bit of a do on Saturday night, is it?
Saturday night.
And will you take in a show or Madame Tussauds or anything like that?
No, we probably won't. We'll just relax, chillax with our friends over there.
Nice. Okay. You're up against Áine Flaherty, not too far away from you. She's from Glenamaddy in County Galway.
Oh, very good.
Hello, Áine.
Hi Ray, how are you?
How far is it from Dunmore to Glenamaddy?
I'm actually from Dunmore.
Oh no! Do you know Marty?
I do, yeah, I do, yeah.
What are the odds? Marty, do
I
you
know
Áine?
It's a setup.
Okay. Right, have you got history, the two of you?
Sorry?
No. I'm joking. I'm saying, if you get history, what's the population? What's the population of Dunmore?
Oh gosh, I don't know.
A few hundred, I'd say. Is it?
Is that 200?
No, a few hundred.
Oh, a few hundred. Yeah, I suppose it would be. Yeah, I don't really know. I don't know. Yeah. Oh yeah, it would be. Yeah.
And did you go to school with him, Marty?
No.
You just know of him.
I know of him, yeah.
Right, okay. We won't ask any more questions on that. So you're just back from the school run?
I'm just back from the school run, yeah.
And who did you have to collect?
I have Olivia is 10 and Joseph is... He just turned 8 there last Friday.
Happy birthday, Joseph, if he's listening. And dinner is what tonight?
Shepherd's pie.
Which is good because I believe the weather isn't great over there at the moment.
No, it's not. It's turned out to be a really miserable evening.
No, that's perfect for, shepherd's pie.
Nice.
Ideal. Comfort food.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And loads of birthdays during January. And you've a big birthday this year.
Yeah, I have. Oh. We won't talk about that now. But we have, it's January is a busy month. I have a nephew, sister and two nieces.
And Joseph, of course.
Joseph, yeah. So we have five birthdays.
We could ask Marty what age you're going to be this year, aren't you? But I know we won't do that.
No. I don't know if he'd know, yeah.
No, I'm joking. Okay, so it's Marty in Dunmore, Áine in Glenamaddy from Dunmore, and it's three questions each. So the deal is that I give you the category and I ask you, do you want to go for a clue? If you go for a clue, you get 1 point. If you don't go for a clue, you get 2 points. Whoever has the most points at the end is the winner. And if it's a draw, we go to a tiebreak question. Good luck to you both, Marty and Áine. Here we go.
Thank you.
Right, Marty. We start with music. Do you want a clue or not?
I go for one.
You go for a clue. Okay. This singer can often be found dancing on the ceiling. Who is this? Who's that?
That'd be Lionel Richie.
It would. You get a point. Would you have known it without the clue?
I would have, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. That's the way it goes. Okay. Áine, music for you as well.
Okay.
Do you want a clue or not?
Okay. No, I won't. No.
You won't? Okay. Who is this? Who's that?
Diana Ross.
It is Diana Ross. 2 points. There you go. Right. Thanks, Mr. Claxon. Back to you, Marty. You're on one. Áine's on two. Irish politics is our second category today. What do you want to do?
I won't bother with a clue.
You won't bother with a clue. Okay.
Yep.
Listen carefully. Who is this? I'd like just better update this. Do I have to update this? Yes, I do. Yeah. Hold on. Who is this?
I like opposition. I think there's a bit of an oppositionist, or if that's a proper noun, in me. I sort of like to think of what's wrong with what somebody said and how could I make it better and all that kind of thing. So I enjoy that. But I don't think we want to be in it for a very long time. But there's no easy route back.
Who's that?
I think it's Mary O'Rourke.
It is Mary O'Rourke. 2 points for you. Well done. Well done, Marty. Áine, Irish politics.
Okay. All right.
A clue or not a clue?
No, I won't go for a clue.
Okay, who is this then?
Now that the bailout programme is over, it has been succeeded by the government's medium-term economic strategy. And there are three pillars to that. One is to continue to control the debt and to reduce it. The second one is to provide adequate credit for a growing economy. And then the third pillar is to grow the economy.
Who's that?
Michael Noonan.
It is Michael Noonan, yes. 2 points. Okay, now Marty. Yeah. Well done to you both so far. You're on 3, Marty. Anya, you're on 4. So, Marty, you sort of have to go for a 2-pointer here, don't you?
Yeah.
The category is sports. If you go and get it right, you put Anya under a bit of pressure. She can go for a 1-pointer and then be even with you. We go to tiebreak question, or she can go for a 2-pointer. If she gets it right, she's today's winner. But you're going for a 2-pointer, Marty.
I go for the 2-pointer.
Okay, sports it is. Who is this?
I'll must be out there among the players and running up and down with them. Be part of the game.
Away into Ben, who started it all 90 yards down the field. He had it again.
Who's that?
Micheál Amara Hurtig.
It is just in there. Micheál Amara Hurtig. Well done. Just before the final whistle there, you got in. And there was just one man on the field as opposed to 16. Okay, so 5. Well done. Anya, you can win this if you decide to go with no clue and get it right. You are today's winner. Get it wrong, Marty wins. If you go with the clue and get it right, then we're into a tie-break situation. So there are the permutations. Okay. What do you want to do?
I'll probably regret it, but I won't take a clue. No, I'll go
you
ahead.
You won't take a clue. Okay, sports is the category. Who is this?
It's just been a great honour to put that green jersey on for over 18 years. And could I ever imagine that I'd score 68 goals and be up there with the, you know, the names that's already there. It's just incredible.
Who's that?
Robbie Keane.
They're saying
Robbie Keane.
The Claxon was gone. They're saying the Claxon was gone. Sorry about that. We have to be strict on it, you know, for obvious reasons. That's very unfortunate now. Yeah.
Yeah.
The clue was this. Okay. This man is famous for his cartwheel celebrations after scoring something he did very often. Sorry about that, Anya. I'm really
That's
am sorry
okay.
about that.
That's fine.
We're going to send out a couple of Ray Darcy Show Keep Cups.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah, and one for Olivia and one for Joseph. So, so nobody will be unhappy there. Great talk, Anya. Hard luck.
Okay,
see you. Bye,
you.
Bye. Marty.
Thanks.
In by the skin of your teeth. Yes. We have to be strict on the Claxon because...
I'm sorry about...
Yeah, it was close, but that's the way it goes. Rules is rules. Now, you are off to the 4-star Royal Marine Hotel with a person of your choice. So when you come back from London, you can make the arrangements for that. You can go online, royalmarine.ie, to see what's in store for you. Okay.
Thanks very much, Ray.
Enjoy the weekend.
Lovely speaking to you.
Yeah, see you, Marty.
Thanks again.
Bye now.
Good luck.
Bye. The Ray.TE Radio 1.
To tell you that tomorrow we're previewing the Euro Song, which is happening on the Late Late Show tomorrow night. So they will be performing the 6 songs. One of them will go on to represent Ireland at this year's Eurovision Song Contest in Liverpool. And we will have a couple of people in studio. We'll play bits of the 6 songs and we'll have a little bit of a chat. Which is good because you prepare then for when you're watching the Late Late Show tomorrow night. So if you want to do your homework, you can go to rte.ie and the 6 songs are up there and you can have them listened to and you can share your opinions via text tomorrow with me and our experts. So that's tomorrow, our preview of what's happening on the Late Late Show tomorrow night. This song is breaking records all over the world. Miley Cyrus, Flowers.
We were good.
Miley Cyrus, Flowers. If you could see what was sitting in front of me right now. Tom King. How are you doing, Tom?
Mr. Ray, it's a pleasure to see you.
Good to see you. Now, get that bottle out of the way there. There you go. Tom is... what's that around your neck, Tom?
Well, that's my sheepskin cloak, as they say, or my shawl.
Right.
So I would be described best as a living historical figure.
Aha.
Yes.
You look like you look like it.
Well, thank you so much.
You're fully immersed. Fully immersed. Congratulations on the award.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, so it says here, Showcase Awards 2023, overall winner, Angawa.
Yes, indeed. The blacksmith.
The blacksmith. Right. You have a great story. I saw you on Nationwide and we decided we'd get you in.
Oh, you're very good. Well, Blondie was so good now, I have to say. Again, a sincere thanks to...
I know you're, because of you're from the past, I know you're not... They're microphones, you see. You speak into them and then people at home can hear you. Sarah, it's magical.
I was going to take a bite out of it.
Right. So just come in a bit closer to the microphone.
Am I okay there?
That's perfect there, yeah. You don't have to lean in. You're in there.
I'm comfortable.
So lockdown changed your life.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look... We all navigated our way through lockdown best we could, but I got a phone call from HR to say, Tom, please stay at home until further notice.
Who'd you work for?
I work for Drumoin Engineering outside Oldcastle.
Okay.
So I've 17 years as a design engineer in Drumoin, and HR rang me to say, please stay at home until further notice. And of course, that then presented an opportunity because I'm always working in a sense there. Look, I'm a salary-based design engineer, but in the evening then... You know, Tom King time, art time, you know, an opportunity to work my hands, an opportunity to make my artwork. But that trundles into 10, 11 o'clock at night. It's late. And you do that over many years. And now I have a chance to really try and grab it and run with it with both hands. And of course, I have to say again, look, a big sincere thank you to a good friend of mine, Anthony Murphy of Mythical Ireland. And Anthony allowed my work, my artwork, you know, be set up on the Mythical Ireland website.
Right.
And that had access then to a Mythical Ireland community, which is a community which is worldwide based.
And they love your pendants.
Absolutely.
Yes.
They channel the orders through, because what's unique about them, Ray, in a sense that if you come to the Boyne Valley, you know, you're in a very ancient land, an incredible place. And if you stand beside the Bruinne na Boinne, you know, monument, you're stood beside a 5,000-year-old burial chamber, shall we say. Now, the OPW can talk to you about that and give you the story of the myth and legend and all the great history with that. But my niche is I can bring you on a journey into the past, shall we say. So I can bring my guests into
So they come to your forge.
They do indeed.
The forge of the smooth road.
Correct and right.
Right.
Back thousands of years ago, Ireland was broken up into five smooth roads that led all tours or communities to the Hill of Tara.
They'd be like the motorways now.
Correct
they?
And right. Yes, absolutely. Right, okay, so every smooth road had their own identifier regarding an Irish word.
Uh-huh.
So the smooth road of interest to me is called Slieve Assel, which ultimately the village became known then as Boher Mean. Boher Road Mean Smooth. So the village was named on the old corridor.
Right.
So it's a lovely story, and I use that as part of my package in a sense there of who and what I am. And another significant milestone or even, you know, feature around the forge is 1.5 miles away is the said resting place of Nile of the Nine Hostages.
Right.
So that's almost like going to Egypt and being beside the pyramids, and somebody says to Ray, there's where Cleopatra
buried. Was he a high king?
He was indeed, yes.
Right.
Yes, quite a character.
How did he get his name?
There's a story of some involvement of nine hostages.
Yeah.
And again, it all trundles along from that.
Yeah.
Again, I could spend 20 minutes. I don't know the details as such, but you can kind of get the gist of what it is.
It's fun. And these are... They're quite heavy to have around your neck. Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're based on the... If you can think about it, if you come to Loch Crewe and look at the rock art, we've got the spirals and all the murals
on the
cairn stones and the
curb stones. They inspire your jewellery.
Without a doubt. Yeah. I mean, again, when you look past in the ancient story of a mythical Ireland, there's an incredible abundance of lovely stories and myth and legend. Of course, I tap into that there as an artist.
Yeah.
And I really enjoy that. And of course, the reaction has been tremendous.
They could be used as weapons as well. Not that I suggest they are.
Well, funny you should say that. I actually have a shawl pin or a hair pin, which ultimately could be used for other functional purposes as
probably
well.
Probably were back
because
in the
it's
day.
Got a point.
Yes, yes.
Correct. But you have to think like the early people. Like, you know, the Stone Age going into the Iron Age. So there's a transition there where they discovered materials where ultimately when they use fire to heat it at great temperatures, they now have a bloom. They now can refine that. They now can develop the blades to defend their people. They can honour their great high kings and queens with ceremonial jewellery. So it's a spectacular setting.
Isn't it mad to imagine?
Yes.
When they discover those things, as you list them there. You know, the first man, because there's that great essay we did in school. You know, the story, I don't know how true it is, that the shed went on fire with the pig and the person went in and they hit the pig and they licked it and went, ooh, that tastes nice.
Correct and right. I mean, that's the magic of it. And again, and Anthony is so good with the story regarding, I mean, he as I say, you know, he worked...
He's the Mythical Ireland man.
He's mythicalireland.com. Yeah. And Anthony had a lovely story there when he had a little story during the lockdown where he sat in his library and looked to his camera, looked to YouTube, looked to Facebook. Hello, I'm Anthony Murphy. This is Mythical Ireland. I'm making a suggestion of talking about the myths and legends as a story for about an hour and a half every night for 105 consecutive nights.
And he did it.
He did it, and he's doing it now once a week. So this pool of interest is climbing on board and just looking in and saying, this is
incredible. Which is all lovely. Now, the thing you have around your neck does look like sheepskin.
It is sheepskin.
Where did you get it? What's the story about yourself and your mate going up to the local, what, furniture shop and getting it?
Yes, a good friend of mine, Davo Grin, he's actually first cousin of Christy Moore.
Is he, right?
He reached out to me, not November of last year, November of the year before, and says, I want to come to the Forge. And he says, Davo, you're very, very welcome. So Davog invited his good friend Colm Keating again, the photographer.
Right.
And so the two gents arrived and I picked them up in Navan. And of course, Davog says, have you got a costume? And I says, no, all I have is the apron. Yeah. He says, right, okay. So the two of us ended up in a big drapery store and we went into the ladies there. Hello there, we're looking for sheepskin rugs. Do you have any? Right. Yeah, no problem. Brought out the sheepskin rug, the knife down the middle of it, over your head. Of course, Davog says, that's way too clean. You see, this is my good one. I have another one, you see.
Oh,
he says, it's way too clean. Back to the Forge. And we had to give it some personality off the concrete.
Yes, of course.
So we had to take the newness of it, you know.
I feel privileged that you wore your good one.
Well, see, it's a good occasion, Ray, you know. I have to look my best.
So you have your award.
I have.
Your sheepskin.
Yes.
Your pendants that you make in the Forge. And you have your banjo with you as well.
I have. I might just knock a little tune later on if that's all
right.
Yeah,
well, we won't have much later on.
Oh, do we not?
Because Cormac and Sarah are on the way.
But so just before I can go, I'll go into the banjo.
It's now or not.
Well, just a big shout out now to the Boyne Valley Network, because again, you know, they've been tremendously good to me. Also with the Leo and the local enterprise because of the support during the showcase.
Have you been on to HR to say you're not going back? Or?
Oh, that's done and dusted.
That's done and dusted,
yes.
Right. This is your full-time job.
Correct.
Yeah, banjo player, pendant maker, award winner, and sheepskin wearer. Yeah,
well, you know what? This is for Luke, because, you know what? Another year old's
two
by.
2 minutes. 2 minutes.
Okay.
Luke Kelly, right.
On Raglan Road of an autumn day, I saw her first and knew that her dark hair would weave a snare that I might one day rue. I saw the danger and I pass along the enchanted way, and I said, let grief be a fallen leaf at the dawning of the day. Hey!
Hey!
Well, that's for Luke now. And of course, poor Mona passed away quite recently. So look, we're thinking of Luke and Luke's family at this time. So that's for Luke.
And were you in a tribute band?
No.
No, a Luke tribute. Remember, there was a Luke tribute band.
That's correct. No, I'm not involved in that.
That's a good look you do there.
Well, thank you so much, Ray.
You have the look of Luke about you.
Well, sure, look.
On Gawa, you're on Instagram.
I am, which
is sort of odd, isn't it?
Well, it is, but it's very funny because during showcase, it's been an absolute whirlwind of an experience.
Yeah.
I mean, it's completely new territory. Like, I mean, one lady
this
said
is down
me,
the RDS.
That's correct.
The weekend, yeah.
Yeah. One lady said to me, she says, "You're very hot at the minute."
Right.
And I said to her, "I says, well, listen, thanks very much. You're a very good-looking lady yourself." And she says, "No, I mean on social media and on the trends."
Oh, I thought she was referring to the Forge.
I thought she was talking about me now, you know. But anyway, but look,
Tom, you have to go, Tom. That was brilliant. We got so much in there. So much in there. On Gawa, you'll find Tom on G-O-B-H-A on Instagram, and there's an underscore there as well.
Correct.
Between the on and the Gawa.
Yes.
Great to see you, Tom. I'm sure we'll meet again.
Well, thank you so much for the opportunity.
Sarah and Cormac are on the way. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday evening. Press the button. There you go.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.